Mark My Words shares Mark Homer's contrarian views on investing, business, finance, economics, and all things money. Mark interviews the world's most successful business, finance, and money experts, as well as imparting his knowledge in a factual, direct, and no-nonsense manner. Welcome to Mark My Words, and here is your host, Mark Homer.
We're on the roof on the fourth floor, 99 apartments, 159 tenants. This is a very special episode. 7 years, nearly 1,000 episodes, and I thought no one better to have a good discussion and debate about all things business and money as my introverted, behind-the-scenes business partner, Mark Homer. And this is Harry, head producer, who's also interviewing us today.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. What is the current state of the UK?
So in the UK at the moment, we've got lots of problems, haven't we? Strikes and ambulances not turning up. And civil servants not at work, but I'm not sure anybody notices that, do they? So we're sort of carrying on as usual. I think clearly the main issue has been broken supply chains because of lockdowns and COVID. Loads of inflation, around 10%, but it looks like it's falling. Government likes to say that's the war in Ukraine. I think the reality is that they printed over £800 billion worth of QE, which quite a lot of it found its way into the money supply, even though they might not want to talk about that. Went into furlough and lots of other grants and schemes, which has generated inflation. Of course, the Bank of England didn't get in front of it. They didn't raise interest rates soon enough, quick enough, and you know, by enough. So maybe to some extent you could say they were having to stay within the fold and do to some extent what the US and Europe were doing, but they've been too slow to get those rates up. So we're in a place now where debt's out of control, the government spending is going up and up, clearly taxation is at eye-watering levels and set to get worse, and somebody needs to come along and fix it. And I don't think that's Rishi Sunak or Keir Starmer.
Yeah, I think the UK is the worst I've seen it, and I'm 44 years old. As an entrepreneur, innovating and disrupting and employing more than 100 people, you've got 20% VAT, now 25% corporate tax, 45% income, national insurance, all these various little stealthy taxes, business rates, all of this racks up. And then what you purchase, I wouldn't be surprised if 2/3 to 3/4 of what the average solo entrepreneur, small business owner spends and earns is tax. There's too many people in government, there's too many civil servants, there's too much red tape around the tax code, which just takes, what was it, Chris, our accountant says 12,000 pages, I don't know, but 1,000, why not just have a flat rate?
It's just, it gets worse and worse, and they have this office for tax simplification, and you know, loads and loads of sort of members of the government over the years have said, oh, we need to simplify tax, we need to make it easier, and the opposite happens. It just gets more and more complicated, more and more layers of new taxes, reliefs removed, and it plays right into the hands of clever accountants, which you end up paying tens of thousands to just to get a sort of normal which you end up paying tens of thousands to just to understand how much tax you should be paying.
I mean, we have quite a big finance department, and most of their time they're not working on our finances, they're working on VAT returns and tax returns, and essentially we pay for them for the government to collect the money. So I don't understand why we can't have a simpler system, a flatter rate, a more fair rate. Lockdown. Look, controversial subject, but in my opinion, I'm just going to say it how it is. I think that the consequences of lockdown, I said this pretty much at the time, are going to be way worse in the long run in what the lockdown saved us from. Think of all the effect of the economy. Think of all the hundreds of billions spent, wasted, maybe. You speak to entrepreneurs and business owners in Britain and they're all pissed. They're moving to Dubai. They're looking at places where they can go and find somewhere where the tax is more fair, where the security is better. You go, everyone's talking about the crime in London. I don't even know where we stop, Harry, because I've only just started on the state of the UK. It's a real shame to me, like how the royal family's been ruined by Andrew and Harry. I mean, where do you want us to stop? What do you think about Prince Harry?
I think Prince Harry is a disgrace. You know, he's turned his back on his family. He's a turncoat, and he's outed a lot of their secrets, which, you know, I would have thought probably the most central code that they would have and that he would have always been brought up with is confidentiality, and you know, he was sort of brought into that system, extremely privileged, went to, you know, the best schools and, you know, surrounded by the best people, and you know, now whenever he walks in a room, everybody wants to please him, and he's got all these titles still, and yet he seems to rail against all that and say that's the reason he's so unhappy, and the royal family have done all this sort of terrible stuff to him. You know, what about him? What about, you know, what he's able to offer instead of just whinging about what they haven't done for him? Yeah, I think he's a disgrace, and really at the heart of it, you know, he's trying to make money, isn't he? Apparently he's made 100 million out of
easy
sort of all of these
easy. Spotify deal, yeah. Tens of millions.
Netflix
tens of millions, yeah. The book,
yeah,
the world record for sales. I mean, you could say he's a good marketer.
You could, but you know, there's a line, isn't there? You know, he's very, very disappointed with him. And my view of him has shifted a little bit. I mean, initially I just thought he was sort of pussy whipped. I thought Meghan had got hold of him, twisted his brain, lobotomised him, and promised him, you know, who knows what. And you know, she basically got her hand up his bottom and was operating like a puppet. I think Jeremy Clarkson came out with that one, and he got into a bit of trouble. But I can probably say it. Yeah, that was my initial view, and I think that's true to some extent. But I'm listening to his book at the moment. Doesn't mean I necessarily agree with it. But
outrageous, Mark! You're perpetuating it.
I'm finding it quite interesting. I mean, there's some absolute nonsense in there. I mean, we've just got to this bit about him being racist on this video, and you know, using the P word on this video to describe one of his friends, you know, in one of his sort of military friends when they're, or military colleagues when they're going on tour, and this video went viral and everyone came out and said, oh, Harry's, you know, not learnt anything from the Nazi, you know, sort of episode when he went out with the Nazi uniform on. And he swears blind for a couple of minutes in this book that he didn't know what that word meant, and or didn't realise that it was offensive. And I thought, you grew up when I grew up, mate. We went to not a completely dissimilar school, and we knew that was
all the language.
We knew that was definitely a naughty word. Yeah. So, you know, if he's lying about that, what else is he lying about? Loads of stuff. I think he's twisted stuff. I suspect he's misremembered some of it, but some of it's very convenient. Apparently a ghostwriter has written the book, and I'm sure they're sort of milking him, and the publisher's saying, oh, we need more, and, you know, well, that's going to be 2 million, let's just stick the real juice in. And, you know, that feels like what happened with Oprah, what happened with Netflix.
Oh, yeah, all this thing about, oh, we just want to go to America and hide and be safe and secure, and I want to protect my family. Oh, we'll go on Oprah, we'll go on Corden, we'll launch a book, we'll go on Netflix. Yeah. I mean, what? At least if he's transparent.
I think some of it is also sibling rivalry. He's obviously always been the spare, sort of second fiddle to his brother, because his brother was, you know, he's going to be king. I think this is his way of sort of, in some ways, getting his own back. And maybe the tonic, you know, was Meghan coming along and sort of, you know, he's been a bit upset with maybe what his brother said and his reaction. And this is his way of sort of, you know, beating his brother, which is pretty sad, really.
Yeah,
but, you know,
sad,
all the media's gone for it. The public's buying it. I've bought the book, so you're right. I'm complicit.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
You're feeding the beast, Mark. I refuse to listen to that book.
I've sent him £1.50. You know, and he's...
Oh, you got it cheap, did you?
I'll put it on. A little bit cheap.
Use your credit. At least use your credit.
Yeah. He's... I mean, he's doing it for the 100 million, isn't he?
Yeah.
you know, and the disloyalty to his family is
well, he threw his dad under the bus on Oprah. He's thrown his son under the bus. I mean, all while his nan's just died. I mean, what did she go through? And you know, you said about their confidentiality.
Yeah.
One thing both you and I have really respected about the Queen, the royal family, never complain and never explain. The grace, the humility, the strength of the Queen and the royal family, never complain, never explain. All he's fucking doing is complaining and explaining.
That's all he does.
He's doing the opposite.
And I know he likes to say that, oh, well, they say it's never complain and never explain, but all the stories you see about, or a lot of the stories you see about the royal family are planted and twisted by them and their sort of press office or press officer, which, you know, maybe they do plot some stories. But I suspect the negative stories about Harry and Meghan, the vast majority of them, are just created by the media. Of course the media lie. They're telling packs of lies on a daily basis, but you don't need to blame all of that on your brother and your dad. Mm. You know, maybe their press officer's been trying to push them forward a bit and get them more publicity, and maybe Camilla said the odd sort of crossword, but do you really think they want to create all of this? I suspect he's losing a grip on reality, and Meghan's certainly sort of facilitating that mind bending that seems to be going on.
Was that the answer you wanted, Harry?
That was the answer I wanted. Okay.
I could talk all day about the state of the UK, but
well, are we living through the death of the UK?
Well, all empires fall in the end. Even the great Roman Empire fell in the end. If you look back through history, I love Ray Dalio's take on this, and I've consumed most of his content, and he looks back through all the empires that grew and fell. He believes the dollar and the US are the next empire to fall, and maybe China is the big new empire. So I suppose you could say through natural evolution, the British Empire was going to fall in the end. It's just a shame it happened while we were in the middle of it, while we got to see it for real. But this is not the best place to live anymore. And costs are so high. We're one of the highest taxing nations out there. Our GDP future is really low, lower than some of the less developed European countries. I can't really see any upside being here. All right, the legal system's pretty good. You're glad you're not in Romania and you're Andrew Tate, because the Romanian legal system, it's a bit more rough and ready. So legally here, it's quite good, it's quite safe. Security used to be good, but apparently the crime in London's really bad now. I think the British Empire is gone, and I think we're just crumbling. I suppose in some ways it's good that you can be global now. You know, our business is local in the UK for seminars and events, but much of it is global. You know, our podcast, our YouTube channel, etc. People buy my books all over the world. But yeah, it's a weird time to be alive.
And Mark, how do we fix this?
Complete overhaul of the political system would be a good one.
I suppose what goes to the root of this is our system of voting in this country, our electoral system. So it's first past the post. So in any constituency, you know, people vote for an MP, and then the party with the most MPs usually forms a government. So you could have a situation where a party which got more votes actually doesn't get to form the government, just because we don't run a system of proportional representation. So I wonder if the issue is with first past the post, it's always just going to favour the two incumbent parties. So you're going to have the sort of Labour Conservative past the parcel, as we have done for many, many decades. And it probably needs something completely new to come along, a new set of people. I was quite excited, actually, when Liz Truss came along. You know, a lot of her ideas were Thatcherite, sort of smaller state, lower tax, you know, and
economic growth focus.
Economic growth and reduced spending. When she said it all during her election campaign, I didn't believe any of it. But that Friday, when she announced it all, I was like, oh my God, she actually is going to do this stuff. So I was really heartened, I was really excited. The problem was she didn't have the right people around her, including the Chancellor, who I think ended up to be pretty poor. to A, execute it properly. She tried to hit it all with a sledgehammer, do it far too quickly. I think she didn't get the OBR in to get it all signed off. And I don't think she explained it or articulated it properly. I think probably because she was not capable. She wasn't really an orator, a little bit like Theresa May, quite wooden. Unfortunately, the root of what we're moaning about now is she's probably put that movement to bed for a number of years. I don't want to say decades, because it makes me feel so bad just thinking that, you know, her sort of ilk, those people that want higher growth, want lower taxes, want smaller government, you know, have been sort of consigned to the scrap heap for a number of years, because as soon as they come along, anyone in the sort of party in power will sort of go, oh, remember what happened to Liz Truss? We can't try that. The public, you know, you saw what the markets thought of that. We saw what the public thought of that. That won't work. But of course, it would have worked if it had been explained in the right way. It needed to be explained in a more stealthy way. You probably noticed with politicians, when they want to put tax up, they don't say they're putting taxes up. They sort of put taxes up, but make it look like something else and explain it in a different way. I think you needed a bit of that with what she... The problem was she told the
National
truth.
National insurance. That's a tax.
Just nonsense.
It's just spin.
It's complete nonsense. Yeah.
What pisses me off is that we didn't have the choice about Liz Truss. We didn't have the choice about Rishi. So we have to sit in this country and just watch all these clowns ruin it, and we don't even get a choice.
The problem,
there is no democracy, doesn't exist.
I'm going to be quite controversial now, but the problem at the root of this, in addition to the other two things I've just mentioned, I think, is that you've got more people in this country. I think it came out last week, something like 50-55% of households take out more than they put in. And there's over a third of the working population are not working. They're doing something else. Now, all right, some people are long-term sick, but you can't tell me that even the majority of those people shouldn't be working. They should be. And in addition to that, if you look at how many people are working out of our population versus not working, more are not working than are working. So if you sort of think about it in those terms, and then you think about democracy, who are those people going to vote for?
Yeah.
They're going to vote for the people...
Socialism!
Well, they're not going to be voting for people that are going to give them less, are they?
No.
As much as I'll be chastised for saying democracy isn't the best system, because usually it is the best system, there are some serious flaws, and I think, you know, that's sort of the basis of it. Somebody needs to come in and sort the welfare system out, get the country back to work.
Yeah.
1.2 million people have taken early retirement because of COVID, because they've got into the sort of habit of furlough, not working, you know, all the sort of Boris just opened his pockets up and sprayed it everywhere. And a lot of those people have got addicted to living in a non-productive way and taking from the state. And I know they're looking at ways of maybe giving them a year's worth of no income tax if they come back to work and various things like that. And they need to get on and do this stuff. A bit of carrot and then a lot of stick as well, but nobody seems to be able to do that. And Rishi's just, you know, more of the same, isn't he? He's, him and sort of Hunter, high tax. Rishi designed the furlough system, didn't he? He's a sort of centre-left politician, like a so-called social democrat type, that believes in higher tax, bigger state. Probably higher taxes than Labour. I mean, it's just bizarre, the situation we're in.
Yeah. Solutions, Harry, I think. It's got to be focused on growth. You can't inflate our way out of this, which they're trying to do, because you just devalue all of our money. Mm. You can't borrow your way out of this, which they keep doing, because that's unsustainable. Growth is the solution, but we don't have anyone in the government that wants to focus on growth. So
it's a you know, growth comes from new businesses and growing businesses. Small businesses supply.
Attracting capital into the UK, subsidising and incentivising innovation and startups.
All of that stuff, and it's small business and medium business that drives all of this and drives all the taxes that are generated.
But they're taxing the fuck out of us.
But they're taxing the hell out of the small businesses, the medium-sized businesses. In fact,
that's because they're easier to get the money from. That's true. Can't get them from Amazon, so they get them from the small businesses.
Absolutely. So they tax the hell out of the part of the economy,
the engine.
That the engine that grows your way out of it. So what do people who are running businesses think? Do you know what? I might just clear off to Dubai where they don't want to charge me all this stuff. There's going to be a brain drain. I've seen it already.
Loads.
People are starting to clear off, and loads of people I'm talking to are saying, do you know what? I might just be better basing my business online and clearing off. Mm. And you'll just see more and more of it. And that just perpetuates the whole thing. Even less growth, even less tax take, and a bigger problem.
So, something that a lot of people say, which I don't think you'll understand, is you've got to tax the rich more. But there's rich and there's super rich. Now, apparently, if you earn more than £75,000 a year, you're rich, which you're not, certainly not with inflation. So, let's say someone who's rich has made £1 million or created £1 million in turnover. That's not really rich, that's small rich. The rich is the super rich. So, why don't they tax the middle and new rich a lot less, which is where most of the economy is coming from, 5 million small businesses. Why don't they tax them less? And why don't they just take 5% more off the trillionaires and Amazon and Google? I'll tell you why, because they're in their freaking pocket.
You're beginning to sound like one of those socialists.
I am not a socialist.
In the middle, a Corbyn.
So, I can have lower taxes if they get charged more.
Do you think it's fair though?
This is how it starts.
No,
because they would say the same about you.
Who would?
Well, the super rich would say, I think you should take it off the middle band because I'm not in it and I've got to pay that.
Well, no, I know billionaires. I've interviewed many billionaires who love paying tax and think that, you know, they want to pay more tax.
They say that on these videos, Rob. They say that on your video, but they don't mean it. When you see how they behave, which is often very different from what
this
they
is
say.
This is the problem with the political system, because they're getting all the donations and they're getting their money and all the power from all the big, you know, I don't want to say the names of the companies, but all the big companies. So, imagine how many trillions they would generate if they just got 5% extra corp tax off Google, Amazon, Facebook. Apparently, they're not really getting any corp tax.
They do need to collect it.
Yeah.
They definitely.
5% more?
Yeah. Then they don't need to be increasing the headline rate, but they need to be.
That's not
better.
What I said, yeah.
They need to be better at collecting it, definitely.
Because one thing I've always said is, you know, when people say, oh, Google pays no tax, it's not true. VAT, if they do draw income, there'll be income. They pay national insurance, all the employers. So they pay billions in tax.
Business rates.
Yeah, all of that.
Duty on all the vans.
So I don't want these companies restricted, but it's the corp tax that they avoid by going into Ireland or wherever. So if the corp tax rate is 25 and we're paying 25 and they're paying nothing because they can, you know, run their business in Ireland because they're pocketing and funding a lot of the campaigns, that's wrong. And I'm sure Google and Amazon and Facebook, etc., and all the other companies I haven't named, and I'm not criticising them, I'm sure they wouldn't mind paying 5% corp. And by the way, if we could pay 0% corp, we would. We can't, because we're not them. So they're getting it wrong, because everyone who's rich, who's getting attacked, is anyone who earns from 75 grand up to a zillion, whereas they need to subsidise, incentivise, reward people for starting them. Why would you start a business in the UK now? Well, your VAT's going to be 20, your corp's going to be 25, your income's going to be 45 once you start earning a bit. You've got national insurance, you've got business rates, you've got all this money on date. We get fined all the time for this, that and the other, late payment this, data issues this. It's just, they've just got so many ways of fining you and tax you. Why would you even start a business here? So how can the economy grow if businesses can't start? Anyway, next question.
Well, is it a conspiracy theory or just a fact that the UK is full of stealth taxes?
I think it's true. What they like to do is sort of Section 24, you know, taxation on landlords, you know, stop landlords being able to offset all their mortgage interest against their rent. So their main business costs can't be deducted from their income. So effectively not taxed on profit, they're taxed on some imaginary amount. In fact, loads of landlords could be paying more in tax than they're actually receiving net in income. That's sort of how that's constructed. You'll never hear the government describe it that way. They'll say, oh no, it's a sort of taxation on higher taxpayers. So, you know, if you've got an income which is, you know, you're a lower rate taxpayer, you'll never pay that, which could be true, but you could be pushed into that at a lower rate tax, into higher rate tax, just because of that sort of stealth tax. That's effectively what it is. You know, something
entrepreneurs
else.
Entrepreneurs relief.
Entrepreneurs relief is a very good one. So, example of entrepreneurs relief was it was unlimited. And I think it was Tony
Blair. You
get
relief for selling your company. Building a business, selling it.
And you could sell it and make an infinite amount, and you would, I think you paid 10% even back then. Mm. And as the years gone on, that reduced to 20 million.
Then 10.
And then 10.
Now
it's one. And so...
You give more than that for a flower shop.
Yeah. It's not... So, you know, that instead of... I suppose, you know, the headline rate of VAT or income tax gets noticed in the media. Things like that, they can just stealthily reduce a relief to increase the amount of tax you're going to have to pay hugely. And there's so many other things, you know, construction equipment. You used to be able to put red diesel in diggers because they're not on the road. Why should they pay duty on diesel for diggers that aren't on the road, they're on construction sites? As of a few months ago, construction equipment, in fact, pretty much all vehicles now that use diesel, you've got to pay duty on it all.
There's
it's just
one
another
reason,
stealth tax.
There's one reason why this is happening, because they're insolvent.
Yeah.
Like, I tell you what pisses me off. If Mark and I took in £10,000 in sales to deliver a service over a year and took £9,000 of that and loaned it and invested it, that could be fraud. If we knowingly trade insolvently, i.e. we're taking money in for services and we don't have the money to prop that business up, we're essentially creating a Ponzi scheme needing to get new money in, you can be struck off as a director, and that's fraud. That's what the government do. They have created their own rules. The cartel set up, the Fed in 1910 set up by billionaires created their own rule, which is fractional reserve banking, and we can create money out of nothing and print it, and we can trade insolvently, and we can build up our debt, and they'll always be in deficit, and that can just go on and go on and go on like a massive Ponzi, and they get away with it. We'd be struck off as directors for doing that.
Probably end up in prison if you did it enough times.
Yeah.
I mean, when you issue the currency, you can just keep on borrowing, and you can't go, and you won't go bust. Because you can just keep issuing currency and creating more inflation. That's what's happening.
Yeah. And by the way, when individuals do that, i.e. Bitcoin, etc., they don't like it and they want to centralise it. It's just a great big monopoly. And people have the illusion that governments and central banks are public services. They're not. They are private.
Well, this is definitely something I wanted to have a whole debate about, because stealth taxes, I seem, are completely out of control and doesn't seem to stop. Mark, I've got something here for you. I don't know if you've heard about this, but there was a think tank trying to lobby the government to put a £100,000 cap on ISIS.
I saw this.
I mean...
Mate, it enraged me when I saw it.
That's so, 5 years at current ISIS amount.
What about the growth?
Yeah.
According,
so it could be 3.5 or 4 years. If you get compounded growth on what you put in.
So at the moment, there are no limits on your ISA pot. So you can put your 20 grand a year in, you keep growing it. I remember, you know, maybe 10 years ago, you got the first ISA millionaires because it started as a PEP, you know, and then it went into maybe a Tesla, and now it's into an ISA. And they're getting income from those ISAs, tax-free, and they can, you know, any sort of money they generate in there is all tax-free. You know, quite fair, set the rules before it started. And this think tank, I think it was last week, suggested that the government should put a 100 grand cap on the maximum ISA amount. So you've got any more in your ISAs than 100 grand, effectively, you've got to sell them and keep whittling it down, just have a maximum amount of 100,000. A bit like the pension, they've introduced a £1 million cap per person. So
but aren't these things that actually help the economy?
I know.
Because the government's not going to pay for us. We are investing in our own pension.
That's the point. Yeah. That's the point. It's absolutely... I mean, they haven't done it, but, you know...
Yeah, but think tanks can end up becoming
exactly.
Something.
I mean...
Work from home. You know, they're testing 4-day work weeks. They're testing if you have the menopause, you have a load of time off. I mean, it's communism.
Yep. I mean, you think about Keir Starmer and his plan to put VAT on private school fees and take away their charitable status so they start paying corporation tax and make them pay business rates. So let's say that adds 40, 50% onto private school fees. He hasn't done it yet, but looks like he's getting in and he says he's doing it. And by the way, he got that idea from Jeremy Corbyn. Jeremy Corbyn dreamt this up and Keir Starmer's taking it and said, this is what I'm doing. Apparently it's popular. So there's been research done on the net effect yeah. of this. So there's been,
which is already fucked.
So the government's had a body go away and do the research, and they were talking about it in the Commons, and they worked out within 5 years the extra cost to the government of this was something like £500 million, because you get that many more people come out of the private sector and go into a state school. And that means that the government then has to pay for extra state school.
And when you say
pupils.
The government, you mean the taxpayer.
The taxpayer. So the reality is, it's like shooting yourself in the foot. You're also defenestrating some of the best institutions in the whole world, you know, that create the best education, that create the best minds in our country. That will create growth and businesses and everything else. And it's just more, it's like when they got rid of grammar schools. It's the politics of envy. And it's popular. A little bit like the sort of tax on landlords. It's popular.
Is that the problem with our government? It's basically what's popular and what's going to get votes.
Short-term votes. Yeah. And then a little bit like the Section 24 tax on landlords.
Who? Yeah, we hate landlords.
Exactly.
Fucking landlords.
Who's paying for that now? Who is paying for that? The rents are going nuts. Yeah. The tenants are paying for it because there is a lack of supply.
Our economy is a cannibal. Our economy is eating itself and it doesn't understand it. Anyway, well, Harry, we'll be on this roof for about 9 weeks.
Just one more thing I want to stay on stealth taxes. And I got a quote here regarding the ISA cap, potential ISA cap. There's a gentleman here who self-employed. He owns his own business. He's only got a few grand in his current account, but he has an ISA with over £100,000 and he ruthlessly invests every single month to grow wealth in his ISA account. And according to this latest study, he's going to be punished with that. He's got no pension. Yeah. So how is a normal entrepreneurs or people investing, how are they supposed to build wealth when they're punished for building wealth in an ISA now?
In the end, he will probably conclude, or he may conclude at some point, I can't do this anymore. I can't grow my business. When I make provision to make sure I look after myself rather than falling on the state, you know, in several decades' time, you know, and I act responsibly, because it all gets taken off me, I can't do this anymore, I'm going to clear off. So you end up with...
You're going to go to a country that does embrace you,
yeah.
that reduces the taxes.
So you're just going to end up with a cesspit of takers, aren't you, in the end? You just get more and more people that want to suck the system dry. And somebody needs to deal with this.
And obviously, we both love cars, we collect cars, and there seems to be a massive stealth tax regarding anything
well,
to do with
cars. You'll own no cars by 20 whatever. You'll own nothing and be happy.
There's ULEZ charges.
It's the World Economic Forum.
Yeah. Own nothing, be happy. I mean, there's ULEZ charges, other congestion charges. There's now the latest legislations for in Oxford. For owning a car.
Electric cars, there'll be no tax. Here you go. Everyone gets them. They don't fucking work. And now you get loads of tax. And they're more expensive to charge than buying fuel.
And the biggest con.
You didn't fall for that, did you, by the way?
No, I bloody did. No. I bloody knew what they were going to do. And this is the biggest con of all. There have been studies done as to the full life cycle impact of an electric car. And at the moment, maybe not in the future as the technology moves on, but at the moment, you have to take something like 50 times the weight of a battery out of the ground in material to actually make the battery. And at the end of the life, you're taking all sorts out, cobalt and loads of precious metals. And at the end, decommissioning these batteries has a massively negative effect on the environment. So if you put that whole thing together, you put the particulates coming off the tyres because of the extra weight with electric cars, and there's various other issues, they're actually worse than for the environment than driving a petrol car. Certainly on the bigger ones. Maybe the smaller ones, that's more questionable. But on the bigger ones, I think it's been quite categorically proven that they are worse for the environment Because, you know, in addition to all of that, you've got to think about how that power is generated. Over half of our power in this country is generated through non-renewable sources. So, you know, you've got gas-fired power stations, you've got coal now, they're having to, you know, fire up the old coal-fired power stations, Drax, all that sort of stuff, because they haven't sort of invested in nuclear, have they, and done the sensible thing several decades ago. You know, you've still got a little bit of oil. So, you know, you have to sort of take that into account, how the electricity is generated as well. So at the moment, it doesn't bloody work. It's more expensive than filling up with petrol. That may sort of temper a little bit now the gas price is dropping. And buying them is so much more expensive. So, oh, and now they're going to tax you. So the whole thing is just, I don't get it. Yeah. I don't see at the moment why you would do it.
Well, mining the lithium from Chile and places like that, it costs so much money, and all the environmental
and
costs from that.
You're exporting a problem to all of these countries. You know, it's a little bit like saying, "Oh no, we're not going to take coal out of the ground in this country. You know, it's not environmentally friendly." But then you see them importing all this coal from all over the place. All you've done is export it to another country.
And then you're reliant on them.
And then
your economy is screwed when you can't get any supply because there's wars in other countries.
Because Putin decides that he's going to turn the gas off.
Has Putin got cancer?
Who knows, Rob? You don't know what to believe with all that. I mean, there's so many reports. This guy, I think he was relatively senior in their government, and he's constantly pumping it. He's got Alzheimer's, he's got cancer, he's got all these other things. But he still keeps on bobbing about, doesn't he? And you see him tapping his foot, and you know he walks with one hand on one side, but apparently that's all KGB officers were trained to do that, to have their hand
by the gun
yeah. ready to go. So, you know, you can't believe a lot of it. Really.
No.
Yeah.
Right. So you're punished and taxed for owning your own business. You're punished and taxed for owning your own business. You're punished and taxed for owning a car collection. You're punished and taxed for owning stocks and shares, and capital gains are going up. So how do you build wealth? What do you invest in? What is a good buy to build wealth in now?
Well, I still love buying buildings. You know, go and buy buildings, claim as many capital allowances as you can, because one day you might not be able to. Claim a load of land remediation relief if you've got asbestos in there or issues in the ground. You know, you get building, there'll be a load of repairs which you can offset. All these things, you know, if you drill away and you do stuff that the masses aren't necessarily doing, that the government's not on to closing down yet, you know, you'll probably get a few years doing that. Pension, we're still, this year we'll probably, we haven't contributed to ours for a little while, so you can go back 3 years, you can put 40 grand in your pension.
So we try and max that every year.
We try and max that, you know, wash you can. And then something else I'll do this year, you have to be careful with this, but EIS is still there. So you can invest in small startup companies. And I did one maybe 2 or 3 years ago and it went really well. I sold them too early, but they were biotech. It was a biotech company, and during the pandemic it went absolutely nuts. I probably doubled my money or something, but it would have gone up 10 times if I held them. Anyway, if you buy those, you get a 30% tax sort of rebate off your income tax, and then if the company goes bust, and there's a reasonable possibility that it will, you get another 30% back. So the maximum you can lose if the company goes bust is 30%, but obviously there's quite a lot of upside. So this year I'll probably buy three of those, probably just 10 grand in each, maybe 30, 40 grand, and get 30% back off my income tax immediately, which, you know, you're supporting startup companies that are generating wealth, they're employing people. Quite a good thing. Hopefully that doesn't get shut down. At the moment, it doesn't look like they're doing it, but it probably won't be long, will it?
So Harry, I'll add, because my side of the business is the information side. So we have 18 books between us that we've written, and I've written a good amount of those, or ghost written or partner written them. So information in the form of books and audio books is a great way to grow a business, because you don't have any hard asset. You don't have to get premises, you don't have to get loans, you don't need stock, you don't need staff. So if people are starting a business now in the UK, in lieu of all of this skullduggery, fuckery going on in the government, I would say keep it lean. So what business can you start or scale that is lean? And anything online and anything digital is pretty lean. So maybe you want to start a podcast channel. Joe Rogan sold his show for 200 million. Maybe you want to start a YouTube. Mr. Beast makes 40, 50 million a year. Maybe you want to run some education. So I have Rob.team. We split all the profits of all of our enterprises together, but Rob.team is a membership site that I've built, nearly 10,000 members in that. So you can turn your passion into your profession, your content into cash flow, your information into income. So as a business, that's also global. So if you are pissed off with the country you're in, then you can move to another one. Maybe you can get another passport. Maybe you can become non-domicile or have a different jurisdiction. So if you do take your money globally online, for example. In terms of investments, property is our main one because it still rules, because everyone needs a house, rents a firm, capital always seems to double every 12, 15 years. I like gold at the moment, because I don't like anything that the government touches. Don't like savings accounts, because essentially they can pull that if they want. I don't like bonds. I like stuff that the government can't get their mitts on. Gold. Classic cars have gone a bit mad, although they might be a bit toppy. Watches have dropped a lot, so the right watches are probably good buy right now. Yeah, I like owning physical stuff. You know, you hear about all these revolutions and wars and overthrows of governments going back in history, and you assume, well, we're more of a refined society now. Those things wouldn't happen. I don't know. I mean, you had the little capital thing, didn't you, where Trump egged a few of them on, and I thought, you know what? Like, if this, I mean, I'll go and bang on frickin' number 10 if they put taxes up even more. So, yeah, there's some things
I would
do.
You might be banging soon.
So is that the way forward? Physical assets, gold, watches, cars, property?
Well, we like physical assets that you can touch and that are real and that are proven. And as you can see, the government are either taxing or limiting or talks about limiting, you know, some of the... They're not state-owned, but I just think money in the bank is state-owned. You don't own that money. You think you do, but you don't. It happened in Lebanon, China, Japan. Ah, shut the banks. There was a bank in Japan. It shut the doors and it said, your savings are now government assets. And that was actually the statement. Your savings are now government assets. And our governments are insolvent. So, like, when you hit debt ceilings, what do you do next? Yes, there'd be a revolution, but I don't know. There was a run on the banks in 2008, wasn't there? Oh, and by the way, who pays the insurance? The taxpayer. See, so the banks can take the money. They give you virtually no interest. They can lend it out in the fractional reserve system at 10x. They can trade insolvently. Your money has been lent, my money's been lent to Mark, Mark's money's been lent to you. If I want it, if 11% of us want it back, the bank's insolvency is manifested. And then the governments just bail them out and the bailout comes from us. So we've lost our money and then the bailout is paid by the taxpayer. It's just a freaking great big carousel.
Why does the government hate entrepreneurs like you?
Because they're not entrepreneurs. They're public schoolboys from Eton.
I would have thought that they don't specifically hate entrepreneurs, but they
well, Nigel
see...
Nigel Farage reckons they do.
Yeah, I think that might play into his narrative somewhat. I think that the government will go and get money from the easiest target, and they will do pretty much whatever to get votes, to retain power, to enable them to stay in their job in 4 or 5 years, every 4 or 5 years. So, you know, I think that, you know, they'll just go for the low-hanging fruit. And if they feel like entrepreneurs have got more money and they're generating more money, then they're the people you go after and they're the people you start taxing.
And we're a very small percentage, whereas 55% of the non-workers are a very big percentage. So who are you going to make happy when you could get your votes? You're going to make happy the 55%, not the 5%.
The workers.
Yeah. So if they want votes and to stay in power, they're not going to make the entrepreneurs happy. They're going to make the 55% who aren't working happy because they get 50%, 5% votes.
So is it harder to start and run a business now than when you guys did it 17 years ago?
It's different.
Different how?
Well, it's easier to start an online business, it's easier to start an e-commerce business, it's easier to start an information business, it's easier to start a YouTube and a podcast, it's easier to monetize social media. We had to go to networking events, that's where we met. Like, there's my business card, should we call each other up later? You know, we had to, like, we sat at a bar and talked for half an hour. So it's easier in that way, it's just more penal now.
So yeah, you were paying less tax 17 years ago. There wasn't Section 24 17 years ago. Surely it was, in some ways, easier and faster to start a business. That's why you went from zero to where you were.
When we started, borrowing was a lot easier.
Too easy.
Maybe it was too easy. So you could buy investment property easier. But, you know, the yields were much lower. You know, you'd lose money every month because the rents wouldn't cover mortgage rates of 5 or 6%. Maybe we're getting back there. So it was different. And, you know, it doesn't mean there's no opportunity. No opportunity now, because there is. There's plenty of opportunity. And like Rob says, you've got this whole online world now that didn't exist before. In addition to that, you know, there's a load of other, you know, building stuff for the last sort of 2-3 years has become very, very difficult because the costs of materials and labour has gone up so much, materials especially. You know, I'm hearing more and more that's drifting down now, and that'll start working again as land prices are dropping, the prices of buildings are dropping. So we'll probably come into a time where the numbers start adding up again. So these things come and go. There'll be little sort of doors will open, you know, and doors will close. I don't see it as sort of harder or easier. It's different, and it depends what you're doing. Some industries are better, some are worse.
And being an entrepreneur is about finding the opportunity, the new opportunity, the new trend. That's what it's all about. We've reinvented our business a good 2 or 3 times.
We have. I was thinking about that the other day. I mean, we started this business as a little property sourcing business, and then it became a training business. Now you're sort of doing all this stuff.
Yeah, and then the big development.
And then the big development. So I think we've been through 3 iterations now. Mm. So you've got to change, iterate, and of course we've got a digital, digital marketing agency now, which would never have existed. So yeah, if you don't move, change, and sort of flex your business, then it will die.
And Harry, just want to put things into context. I know we've had a good rant about the government, and I believe everything I've said. That doesn't mean business isn't good. Business is good. It doesn't mean there's not great opportunity. There's great opportunity. You've just got to leverage what you can leverage. And if you have to be more global, like the lockdown, for example, so many things I think were so wrong about that. And it was fucking hard for us. I mean, we had about 100 staff in the office, you know, plus or minus 5. It was literally almost bang on 100. And to think, well, we might have to let everyone go. That is like the nightmare that you have as an employer that you never want to face. But in many ways, it was really good for us. It's made us stronger. In fact, we had one of our best years in revenue last year, and we found new opportunities. So you have to leverage. I'm not really a moaner, I'm a ranter. So when I rant about things, I'm not upset, I'm not sad, I'm not depressed, I'm not a victim. I'm ranting about it to create energy to go and fucking do something about it.
Who controls the world's money?
Vanguard, BlackRock.
is that conspiracy BS? I mean,
I own Vanguard
shares. Does that mean I control the world?
It's not conspiracy.
Maybe not Vanguard because it's a tracker, but I think BlackRock and I don't know, Blackstone, and in this country maybe LNG and.
Well, Blackstone
LNG.
Just bought Justin Bieber's music, didn't they? Blackstone.
100 mil, 200 mil?
200 mil.
Yeah. I think those big asset managers, yeah. I think that's a good call. I think that's probably about right.
We interviewed someone, didn't we, who'd managed about 160 billion. Mm. I think it was pension fund money. And, you know, you assume the central banks or the billionaires control the money. But he said these big
asset
funds,
managers.
Yeah, these asset managers have crazy money.
They do. They do.
Yeah. And look at what they own. They own everything.
They do.
So, and by the way, the media, though, you said who controls the world's money. And there was a mention of those. And by the way, they're not all conspiracy theories. They're invested in so... Everyone's like, oh, Vanguard, BlackRock, they are, you know, and all the evil nefarious stuff. They own everything. So they're well diversified. We should just do it through the rain. Don't worry about the rain. but whilst they may control a great deal of the money flow, we control our own money. You know, keep it out of the bank where you can. Be good at earning it. Be good at investing it. We control our own money. But the media, though, can... whoever controls the world is who controls the media. Because you said, you know,
Rupert Murdoch.
Because Mark just said, you know, stories planted in the media. But that's where all the propaganda is propagated from. Whoever controls the media, and I don't know who controls the media.
Rupert Murdoch. He's surely the most powerful media figure in the world.
And where do the Rothschilds sit in this?
Well, probably not as powerful in terms of the media.
So I think whoever controls the media controls the world.
Are the central banks a scam?
The central banks are a monopoly. In the veil of a public service, when in reality they're a private for-profit organisation. As long as you know that, it's fine, isn't it? Because, you know, for example, printing money as debt, in a way it's just a Ponzi, isn't it? I.e. we're building more and more debt, money for nothing, when's it getting paid back?
Never,
exactly. But if I could print my own, if you could start a company and print your own money, would you do it?
Yeah.
Of course you fucking would, and
yeah.
So would I.
Yeah.
So what it is, it's a really clever, monopolised, private conglomerate or cartel. The Fed apparently was launched in 1910 by some big cheeses in America who owned a quarter of the money.
Jekyll Island.
That's one theory. One theory. But, yeah. I mean, human beings have a leaning towards greed and power. And, like, let's be honest here, Mark. If we could create a monopoly in the property training industry in our niche, would we?
Absolutely
you would. Why wouldn't you? Would you try and get rid of all your competitors and own the space? Of course you would. So,
it's just the ultimate objective of every business.
Yeah.
But obviously, loads of the big
market
ones like
share.
To... Market share. Of course it is. You know, the big ones like to wax lyrical about, you know, being, you know, anti-monopoly and hate it, loving competition, all that. If they told you the truth, of course they'd love to monopolise the whole thing. But the authorities stop them.
Although the authorities are them.
Yeah.
So how can you get control on your wealth when the government and the banks just keep printing money, inflation is skyrocketing?
Don't have all your money in money.
Yeah,
because money isn't an asset.
And you need real assets, don't you? So you need property, you need equities, physical assets like Rob mentioned.
Digital assets.
Some Bitcoin's probably a good idea. A lot of the others are just rubbish, I think, in terms of, you know, cryptocurrencies, maybe Ethereum. I've got some Bitcoin, as long as it's stored in the right way. We've always
Cold
done that.
Storage.
Always done it. You know, put it on memory sticks and sort of kept
it
off the exchanges. Way before FTX we were doing that. I think you just need to take control of it and put it into real assets rather than leaving it in cash. Government bonds, you're sort of perpetuating that. You will have some bonds. If you've got any funds, often some of it gets put into bonds. But
it's well diversified.
Yeah, exactly.
So soft assets, hard assets. Get as much hard asset and as less soft asset. So soft asset is money. And money is a liability, not an asset. The banks know money is a liability. That's why they go lend it out and don't leave it on their balance sheet. On their balance sheet, it's a liability because it's debt. So get out of money. Don't rely on money. As soon as you've got any form of cash or savings, hard assets. Now, some people say, oh, well, isn't the stock market? No, because it's diversified across a load of companies and you're putting it into big companies that have got proven history. But yeah, I'm more and more into property and gold and watches and physical stuff.
You're hugely overweight on property, hugely, as I am.
Yeah.
You
manage the portfolio.
That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
Mark,
yeah.
Is it true that for your wedding you were gifted quite a bit of Bitcoin?
I still don't know exactly how much, but I did get a nice little chunk from one of our business partners, yeah.
Did you have any idea how much it was worth then? Because surely
no,
it's worth considerable.
I still haven't looked and I still haven't worked out how to work it out. And I asked him not long ago and he said, I can't remember how much I put on there, but it was a reasonable amount.
When did you get married? How many years ago?
2017.
Oh, so the price of Bitcoin was probably, what, a grand back then? Less?
It wasn't that much. So I'm looking forward to... I almost don't want to know, because if he really hasn't bought us very much, then I'm going to be disappointed. I'm just going through a process at the moment. I was trying to buy some when it was 13 or 14,000 sterling. It's gone up a bit now, and I'm getting less interested again. But I've actually got a Trezor, a Ledger, and I can't remember the other three different types of storage, and I'm just going through the process, so I was going to do it as part of that. So I'll probably find out shortly. I don't want to be disappointed, though. But it'll have gone up a lot, won't it? He might have bought me one Bitcoin, do you think? Maybe.
One way to find out.
Is it who I think it is?
Yeah.
I mean, he got in Bitcoin so early. He's a Bitcoin zillionaire. So.
Are we sleepwalking into a recession?
No, we're nosediving into it. The plane is going.
We're down. In a recession, I think.
We're not sleepwalking into it.
The numbers just aren't out yet. I think it's shallower than a lot of people were predicting.
I think it's going to go deep and long.
I think it's probably shallow now because I think the energy's not been as bad, because the energy is backed off quite a bit now. The gas price has dropped a lot.
You think, though, the implications and the costs of lockdown are just going to drag out and drag out?
I think they will, and I think there'll be a huge drag on growth. Yeah. And I also think that we've got issues from Brexit and trade and all this stuff, which means we're going to, you know, we're going to be just bumping in, I think, in the positive range, not in recession, but I think it's going to be real anemic growth, and it's going to go on and on until somebody has got the balls and the sort of stickability and the ability to just work at this and bloody fix it all. They need a full sort of 4 or 5 year term to do a load of unpopular stuff and to get on with it. Where is Margaret Thatcher when you need her?